Welcome to the Chase Down Podcast, brought to you by Blue Wire. I'm your host, Justin Roan. The Cleveland Cavaliers just finished a thrilling game against the Oklahoma City Thunder. Two elite teams going at it. Even though the MVP caliber player ended up missing most of the game, and Russell Westbrook also missed some time, it still ended up being an exciting game. With me to talk about the game is my co-host, Carter Rodriguez. Carter, how's it going?
Oh, it's going fine. I consider any loss by less than double digits a sort of win. So from that perspective, I think it was great to see the Cavs pick up perhaps, what, their fourth win of the season? I mean, they're on fire.
Yeah, well, I think this I think this is the Cavs' maybe third lesson of the year.
Excuse me, we don't do those anymore.
No, I feel like this was still a lesson game. I feel like it was a lesson.
This actually was a lesson game. Shade at the now departed Tyronn Lue, notwithstanding. Anyway, we have a guest. Sorry.
We do have a
guest.
This
is my fault, as always.
It is. You are hogging possessions like Jordan Clarkson, but we'll get over it. Joining us to talk about the game, the Thunder, and the league at large is our friend of the pod, David Brandon, Daily Thunder writer. And is there anything else I'm missing there, buddy?
Not really. I contribute for Daily Thunder every now and again, mainly about salary cap stuff. I haven't been writing much lately, but I'm still kind of following the league. So, yep.
Well, you're missing out on one of the best years in Thunder history. I don't know why you wouldn't be jumping all over this.
Yeah, it's great. I mean, we just barely beat the Cavs in regulation, and it was a lesson game.
David. You forgot. Tristan Thompson said that the East runs through Cleveland. So to come on the road and get a win in Cleveland, I think that's pretty big for you guys, right?
Yeah, well, I mean, the East runs through Cleveland, and the Cavs run through Tristan Thompson. So obviously, like, the East runs through Tristan Thompson.
David, I want you to be honest with me. Did you expect the unexpected and the Tristan Thompson post-up heavy offense?
That was a surprise. I told Justin before the pod started that it actually reminded me of when Kendrick Perkins was in Oklahoma City. Every single time the game started, the first possession of the game, or at least it felt like this, would be a Kendrick Perkins post-up.
So you're saying that you feel like the Cavs treat every possession like it's the first possession of the game?
Well, I mean, I feel like Jordan Clarkson treats every possession like it's the first possession of the game. I don't know about the Cavs as a whole, but
no, Jordan Clarkson treats every possession like there's 4 seconds left on the shot clock or 4 seconds left in the game. That guy, actually, this game might, I feel like it could have set an NBA record for the fewest amount of pass attempts by point guards. Like between Colin Sexton, Dennis Schroeder, and Jordan Clarkson, there weren't a lot of guys giving up the ball today.
Yeah, it was not good.
I'll tell you what, if you're looking to be excited about Colin Sexton, nothing gets you ramped up quite like knowing that when he goes to the bench, it means Jordan Clarkson has to come on. Because every time I saw Colin Sexton tonight, I was like, hell yeah, let's ride, baby. Because the second he sat, I knew I was in for a world of pain.
Hey, well, let's be honest. Fair. Yeah, go ahead, David.
Oh, I was going to say, like, to be fair, like in the second half, Clarkson actually started passing the ball. And lo and behold, they actually got better. And Sexton looked solid. Like, he's not – I don't know if he's lighting the world on fire right now, but he's solid. Like, people – I think they did him a disservice playing him next to Jordan Clarkson because, you know, that every time he's on the court, you know, like, the ball just gravitates to his hands. So
yeah, I mean, it's really weird. And, like, it's also like the offense hasn't really done him any favors. Like really, at this point in Sexton's career with his jumper where it is – and his playmaking where it is, really, you want to just give him spread pick and rolls, like high pick and rolls with the floor spread. And when they did that, for the most part, he did pretty well. Do you think that's fair to say, Justin?
Yeah, I think he had a much, much better game. It's funny that we went from 2 nights ago where he only played 17 minutes to 42 minutes tonight. I thought Sexton, what I really was impressed with was –
I didn't think he took a ton of bad shots. Like, there was the possession where he didn't swing the ball to JR, and you could see JR get a little dejected. And in all fairness, JR ignored him on the previous possession. But I thought he showed a lot of patience. He was getting to the rim well. And overall, this was probably Sexton's best game. And to your point, what you said earlier, Carter, about kind of sighing when Sexton was coming off the floor for Clarkson, that's the way this season should be. Jordan Clarkson coming in for Sexton should bring us pain, and we should want to see Sexton on the court. And I feel like this is the first time all year I've really wanted to see Sexton on the court. Playing him with the starters was so good. I just wish it could have at least had more Jetty in this game, because I feel the Cavs were just kind of lacking that one consistent wing. And with Clarkson and JR taking as many shots as they did down the stretch, I would have liked to see some other option out there.
A cool 10 of 34 from the field for you boys. Woo! Jordan Clarkson and J.R. Smith.
Woo!
Yikes. Watching games like this, and I know OKC is a really, really good defensive team. I just, like, I'm blown away the Cavs have topped 40% from the field this season. Like, you watch some of these possessions and you're like, yeah, there's just no way for them to score. And that's all right, but they can't. It's not anyone's fault, but they can't.
Dave and I were joking around before you came on, Carter, because for our listeners, Carter was late. We were joking around that this is what a game looks like when Tristan Thompson is the best player on one of the teams. Like, it was pretty ugly at times.
Yeah, I mean, you want to be like a little encouraged on the other end, like holding OKC to a pretty horrific offensive game, but like OKC's pretty toothless without Russ, it feels. I mean, have they been playing a little better without Russ, David? I haven't actually gotten to see them very closely this year.
Well, the first couple of games of the season were really rough, and then the first two with Russ back were kind of shaky. With Russ, it's actually been pretty – like, I've been encouraged with what I've seen with them with Russ. He's been able to play a little bit together with Schroeder. He's worked a little off the ball. He's not dominating quite as much. I haven't checked the numbers on that, but it feels like he's deferring a little bit more, and the team's been doing pretty well lately. But without him, what happens is – I mean, Schroeder's kind of like 2010, 2011 Westbrook in some ways. Just like the throw your head down and bowl your way to the rim sort of thing. Or, I mean, he pulled up for a couple of weird threes. But, the main place where it suffers is that they played Schroeder and Westbrook together a decent amount, and Felton hasn't played at all. And when you bring Felton in with the bench, you lose having a guard that can penetrate. And the Thunder needs somebody who can penetrate on the floor at all times, because otherwise Paul George doesn't get looks, Abrines doesn't get looks, because when somebody's getting in and driving the lane and getting to the hole, then everything opens up for everyone else, and it just didn't this game.
Yeah, it's funny with this team, this Thunder team without Westbrook is kind of, in a lot of ways, like just a more talented version of the Cavs offensively, which is like they have some players who can do some good things, but they need a destabilizer. Like,
right.
Very, very few players on this Thunder team are capable of, someone like Steven Adams, who's a great player. He doesn't really force the defense to bend to his will. Like, for the most part, I think the Thunder played against a set defense this entire game. And even the Cavs' set defense is not terrible.
Right, right. And to David's point, like, Raymond Felton actually hasn't been that bad, but you still do need that dynamic guy that's actually going to get the defense to collapse. And a lot of that's actually what the Cavs have been missing this season. Like,
yeah, that's kind of why I wanted them just to say fuck it. And like, if nothing else, Colin Sexton makes a defense react when he really tries to take it to the cup. And like, yeah, there's going to be growing pains, just like there's huge growing pains with Jetty's jumper. But it's like, you might as well just get the reps in.
Absolutely.
There's just no point to running dribble handoffs with George Hill and Tristan Thompson. Like, you're not that's the kind of when I've criticized this Cavs team, it's like they don't work towards anything on offense. Like, you're not seeing like what the future Cavs might look like, you know? There's no real effort to do that. And like that's kind of why I would like to see Sexton just stay in the starting lineup and take his lumps from time to time, even if Dennis Schroeder's going to cook him and, you know, he's maybe not going to get many assists. It just feels like that's the next step for this Cavs team.
Yeah, I agree. David, what's the next step for the Thunder, though? Like, what type of growth are you looking for this season? What are realistic expectations for you have for the team? Because obviously they brought back Paul George, which got a lot of attention in the offseason, not even giving LA a meeting, which still just tickles me in all the right places.
Oh, it's great. It's
but with kind of a core being established, I like the flyer they took on Nerlens Noel. What's kind of the realistic expectations for this season?
I think second round, but I'm also a little bit of a pessimist about stuff. Okay. I mean, I think they'll get past the first round. I thought that last year, but Utah was a horrible matchup for them, and they were bad. Like, they were complacent coming in, but it was a really, really bad matchup too. And presuming they don't get the Utah matchup again, or like Golden State, I think they'll be fine.
Go ahead, Justin.
I'm 99% sure I'm about to say the same thing Carter was about to say. So, can you speak to Ricky Rubio playing Russ and Ingles out playing Paul George in that series? Because that still is one of the most wild things I've ever seen.
That wasn't where I was going, but I'm glad you went there. That's my favorite. That's my favorite feud of all time.
I love the Jazz though, and like Ingles is my guy because I'm part Australian, and so I cheer for Ingles. Like I cheer for the Australian national team and all that. So like Ingles is my guy. So I'm on board with him. But yeah, it was wild. I've never seen anything like Rubio took Westbrook behind the woodshed for like half of that series, maybe more. There was like one game where Westbrook did real well, and then like the rest of it, Rubio just like took him apart.
Yeah, you hate to see it. It was it was tough. There's just no way around it, you know. What I was actually going to ask was kind of a wider angle discussion about the conference. The Rockets look like dog shit, and given that, that's kind of like the path for past the second round for the Thunder is no one else looks that good. Like, yeah, the Nuggets are 9-2 and the Blazers are 8-3, but like who gives a shit? Like that's kind of my reaction to both of those things. Like I don't see those teams and say they are like, obviously the Warriors are always in a tier of their own, but the Rockets were kind of alone in that second tier in the West last year. I don't see anyone in a set. I think you can actually just skip straight past a second tier and go straight to a third in the West. And there's like five teams in there.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. Like, I don't trust the Nuggets, and I don't completely trust the Pelicans. I mean, Anthony Davis has been balling, but they always have injury issues.
And Pelicans aren't even in the playoffs right now.
Yeah, but they'll turn that. Like, you know, they've got Anthony Davis. They'll be fine.
Are we sure?
I say that, actually.
That's what I'm saying.
And also for the I don't trust Denver point that you guys are making, they just lost to Memphis, 89.
Dude, Memphis is good, dude.
Memphis is solid.
I love Memphis's roster. I think they're actually a decent team.
But I'm talking about if you're – I'm talking about if you're looking for a second tier of their own, and your point was that Denver isn't in that.
They're not. They're just not. And like, I know a bunch of nerds on Twitter will tell us otherwise, because their favorite player is a guy who looks like he perpetually has a head cold. But
Jamal Murray doesn't look like that.
Justin, were you just like rock hard during that 48-point game?
Oh, like a diamond.
I love that you have such a significant amount of Canadian nationalism when it comes to the basketball scene. It's like the one like soft outer shell, and that's like, and what like I love that you've somehow gotten away with all your Wiggins slander because it's really easy to do now. But like, I don't feel like people appropriately know why. Like, you hate him because he bailed on Canada.
Yeah.
not because he sucks. You would hate him if he was great.
No, because he had the audacity to say that he wasn't going to play for the national team unless they paid him and let his brother play. Team Canada didn't go that route. He still ended up playing for them, but he played so fucking awful that they lost to Venezuela. And down the stretch, when Canada had to make kind of their comeback run to make it a game, he got benched for someone named Aaron Dornacamp.
Oh, I thought the Scrub Boys came in for him.
Oh, I think one of the Scrub Brothers might have been in down the
stretch. Philip and Billup, the Scrub Twins.
I don't know much about the Canadian national team outside of, like, the big names, so I just picture everybody past, like, the top three or four guys in the NBA as Plumlee clones.
Well, the Scrubs, and I'm not making up that there are a pair of brothers with the last name Scrub on the Canadian national team.
That is beautiful.
My buddy played against them in the CIS championship game, which is basically like the NCAA final up here. And the whole time I was like, you got roasted by Scrubs, man. and when you ask who's on the Canadian national team, so they played like three games this summer, and one of them, the NBA guys play all sat. So they had Joel Anthony fly in from like Russia. He landed from his flight like 6 hours later, played a game for Team Canada. I think he put up like 15 and 15 and then flew back like just for one day. That guy's a trooper.
Well, that certainly is not Andrew Wiggins. I'll tell you that much. traitor.
Most Canadians will get a lot of love for me, with like the exception of Kelly Olynyk, Bennett, and Wiggins.
That's
why fair. Kelly Olynyk? What did Kelly Olynyk do to you?
He ripped Kevin Love's
title.
Yeah, he ripped Kevin Love's arm out of its socket. What are you talking about?
Okay.
Thinking Canada and not Cavs. Okay, I'm with you.
That's 2015 Finals MVP, Kelly Olynyk.
David, I'm curious. So, like, obviously, we've joked and stuff. Like, do you feel like the energy around the Thunder is like kind of weird this year? That's every time I've watched them, things don't look quite right for a team that mostly ran things back.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, it feels all right to me, actually.
Does it feel stagnant at all, or is it mostly like you're having fun watching them?
I feel better about the team this year than I did last year.
That's interesting. Now, is that just the departure of Carmelo Anthony?
No, not even just that. But, like, they're more cohesive in terms of what they want to run. When they have Russ in and they have Dennis running the bench, there's a consistent vision for what they want. And I think this is the first time since Kevin Durant left that they've actually kind of got the personnel for what they want to do.
Right.
I mean, between, you know, they've got a whole bunch of guys who'd like to get out and run in transition. They got a couple shooters. They could use another one. But Abrines coming on the way he has helped. But they need a little bit more shooting. But Patterson coming back to form, and Abrines and Paul George, I mean, you got enough to get by. And everybody else just runs the floor in transition. And, yeah, I mean, it feels like everybody's a little more on the same page. Like last year, I think I would have said they felt stagnant last year more than this. Like they felt complacent.
Huh.
Like from the very beginning of the season, it felt like there was a complacency and everybody kind of picked up on it a little bit. Like in interviews and stuff, it was mentioned occasionally from
there was an entitlement, I think, for sure.
Yeah.
Like they definitely thought they were an upper tier team just by virtue of the names on the roster. And then they got punched in the mouth a few times.
Yeah. Like it feels like they got punched in the mouth, and I got a few younger guys in, and there's not nearly the same sort of like, okay, well, we just show up.
Yeah.
Right.
You know, what's interesting that you said about Schroeder to me is like, cause you kind of said like, okay, well, he can kind of like run the unit without like changing too much when Westbrook's out. And it actually made me think, you know, another parallel to the Cavs, but Cavs in the past is like, you know, the Cavs bench units were always terrible in the second LeBron era, and everyone kind of criticized them for not being able to generate, you know, a good offense without him. And it was always like, well, like LeBron dictates so much of what you do on offense, and it's so uniquely built around him that it's kind of hard just to build two offenses in. You know, it's almost like you just kind of have to take a small L and hope you can survive without him, because when you have him, it's so good. And I kind of actually feel like, to a similar degree, that's Russ. Russ defines the Thunder's structure so much on offense that, but luckily for them, in a weird way, he's not as good as LeBron. So you can find like a facsimile of like, hey, like Dennis Schroeder isn't great, but he can do roughly what Russ does stylistically. And that'll be enough to buoy us when Russ has to sit down.
Yeah. I mean, like, if you're looking for a facsimile for LeBron, I mean, what's the next step?
Is there none.
Jetty. Evan Turner?
Yeah.
Nicholas Batum? Maybe?
Yeah, it wouldn't work the right way. That's like obviously a good problem to have. It's hard to find a replacement for LeBron off the bench, but like for the Thunder, it was actually an enormous issue, you know, because you would put in Raymond Felton and he plays so differently.
Dude, and Raymond Felton was a breath of fresh air.
Yeah, he was good.
He
still plays differently.
For a whole year. Like Russell Westbrook should dedicate half of his MVP award to Samaje Christen. Because half of it was just like how bad the team was when he went to the bench. Because Samaje, I don't know, he's playing ball in what, like Iran or something now?
Before
we pivot off Samaje Christen, did you know his name is just James spelled backwards and that's why his name is Samaje?
Yes. Like we beat that one to death.
I recently learned that and I was blown away.
I had no idea. That's so good. David, how much of the MVP trophy goes to Russ then? Because if you're giving half of it to him and like a third of it has to go to Steven Adams for giving him rebounds, like how much goes to Russ?
Oh, funny that you say that, because like Steven Adams is now finally averaging double digits in rebounds and I have not heard a peep out of Samus Fondiari.
Well, first of all, that's because Russ has missed time. I mean, you look at it, he got 13 tonight. I think that's going to be the strategy, is Russ is just going to play every other game, and there you go.
That's how Steven gets his numbers.
You average the boards out, and then Steven just gets his regular numbers.
Yeah, look at the last two games before this. He had 13 tonight, and he had 8 the game before, and 3 against Washington. So,
David, you have to embrace this.
and as people that are adjusting, what's it like rooting for a point guard that can't shoot?
It's fine. I'm used to it.
I guess we got used to it with Isaiah Thomas last year.
Jesus.
And Dwayne Wade.
Last year sucked, huh, Justin?
What's that?
Last year sucked, huh?
Last year really sucked. Although
I had a revolving door of point guards, I'd forgotten about that.
Dude, people forget that Dwayne Wade and Derrick Rose and Isaiah Thomas played on that Cavs team.
You know what's the weirdest part? They might have been a big part of why the Cavs actually made playoffs, because they got a lot of wins early in the season, and they got wins with the team being better when LeBron sat.
Yeah, it was one of the weirdest phenomenons. Like when LeBron was on the floor the first half of the year, they were getting outscored by like 6 points per 100 possessions, kind of like the Lakers this year. Sort of a problem when you don't put players he can play with. Anyway, they were getting outscored with him on the floor, outscoring teams with him on the bench. That was weird, but you know, ultimately doesn't matter. Which is everything, really.
The best part about the Lakers is that they just took like all the players that he played with in Cleveland and just gave him like the worst versions of them to play with.
Pretty much. I mean, you have Brandon Ingram, who's like the poor man's Jetty. You have Lance Stevenson, who's like the poor man's Clarkson. JaVale's the poor man's Tristan. I see what you're getting at here, and they just need to find a poor man's George Hill, because they don't even have that. Speaking of George Hill, do you think they're going to bench Sexton after he finally had a good game? Because I think there's an opportunity here, especially while Sam Decker's out, to play Sexton and Hill together, which has been what the Cavs have needed basically all season and for whatever reason have stayed away from.
Are you asking me?
I'm asking anybody.
Well, I'm happy to jump in. I think they're going to bring Hill back out, and like, I think they're going to be wrong to do it, but it's just so clear that they just don't really – doesn't feel like this coaching staff likes Colin Sexton very much. or anyone for that matter. It's really weird. I don't know, man. It just feels like – I mean, the solution to me all along has just been Hill and Sexton. Because, like, who in this front office could still possibly think Rodney Hood's part of the future here?
What happened to him?
He sucks at basketball. That's what happened, David.
He was good on the Jazz for a bit, and then, like, he just disappeared.
Dude, I've said this a lot on this podcast, so sorry for any repeat listeners. But, like, he didn't pass one of the most important tests, which is the team that got rid of him. Their entire fan base, not a single person was sad to see him go. And it was like, oh, he's having a career year and no Jazz fans are bummed. Jazz fans who famously overrate their own players. I was like, oh.
Yeah, that's a really, really good test. And like,
especially if they're having one now that he's gone, a good year.
Now that he's gone, you get like more and more stories coming out of like all the stuff that went on, like all the shit that went on behind the scenes and literal shit, because apparently one of his problems is nervous poops. that he just so he just gets nervous and can't really play, so he shits himself.
Justin, this is not a woke part of the segment.
No, I'm saying Hey, it's sad. It's not woke to say that, but it also is just kind of the reality. And sports are ridiculous. So
Bob.
Not great. Okay, fine. Anyways, consistency is an issue with Rodney Hood. Confidence is an issue. I think they still haven't really cleared out a role for him or anybody on this team.
He just doesn't do anything good, though. That's what kills me. It's not like he's inconsistent. But sometimes he's really good. He's never good.
Yeah, sometimes he's good. But he had that game where he did the dunk and stuff.
Like, what's fucking good? Hitting 4 dribble handoff 19 footers instead of 2? Like, I'm so uninterested.
See, here's the thing. Once again, you're acting like you've actually watched the Cavs this season and not just the last 2 games. Mr. I was in LA and too good for people.
I watched as much as I could. Thank you very much.
He put up 26 points on 9 of 13 shooting against Atlanta. That was good.
Yeah, that's one good game.
Yeah, but you said he's never good. You said good games are 4.
You're right. I knew about that fucking stat line. I watched his highlights.
Sure. Yeah, you knew about the stat line because you're looking at your phone while you're off in LA talking about how it's superior to other places.
Oh.
You were a dick last episode.
I was in LA. That is a lie.
Dude.
David's with me.
This is just like classic.
I'm with Justin here.
Here's what you guys are doing.
Let's go.
You are just applying little brother syndrome to this, and I don't subscribe to it. Ohio's fine. LA is objectively a little bit better. I'm happy to be in Ohio, but it's nicer in LA. That's really what it comes down to.
I don't know.
I'm not here to show everyone how cool my city is by shitting on LA.
You underrated the middle of the country, man. Middle of both countries, to be honest.
I rate the middle of the country just right. Thank you very much. I've lived in it my whole goddamn life.
See, David, this is what happens. Carter moves out of the central time zone, and all of a sudden he's all out of
God, way. I miss this. Can we talk about the central time zone and how much I miss it? It's 10:46 right now. Yep. That sucks. Monday Night Football doesn't end till like 1 in the morning for me. It's horrible.
Yeah, Central Time Zone is the best sports watching.
It's the best sports time zone.
You know what? And not to keep hammering the NFL drum, but like having the game start at noon is so is the perfect time for because like I wouldn't really if I like I was don't know if you guys heard I was in LA last couple weeks and having games start at 10, it's too early. I'm not thinking football yet.
Now, what's wild to me though is that even with like that crazy time change, like even now at like I guess it would be 9 for you or 8 for me. Sam Esfandiari is up at 6 in the morning tweeting about San Francisco housing.
Yeah, man. Like, I'll tell you what. Do what you love or what you're passionate about, and no greater example than Sam Esfandiari's love of the San Francisco housing market.
It is. It's incredible.
The passion has to be mad online about something none of his followers care about.
Especially when you contrast it with all the jokes about like the affordable housing in whatever market they're playing against in the playoffs, where that was like half the trash talking was going on like real estate websites and looking up what the average housing is. And then throughout the year, it's just Sam bitching about how expensive it
is. The very definition of weird flex, but okay. was fucking Bay Area fans shitting on us for having houses we could afford while they're in god like half bedroom bungalows with six roommates.
Like, yeah, you have to pay $125,000 for a house in a good suburban area
with schools, you fucking pleb.
Sam has shown me pictures of his room and it's like 8x8. There's a bunk bed with a tub for the top bunk for some reason. Like there's no space there. I don't.
Justin, I don't really want to hear about the dudes you and Sam are sending each other. I know you know all about his room, but you know, I think this is a basketball podcast ultimately, and I'd like you to show some proper respect.
Guys, watching a team with Tristan Thompson as their best player isn't the best time, but you can make it a little more exciting for yourself when you have some action on the game, which is why Carter and I both use MyBookie.
MyBookie, of course, is the one bet that we're happy with and we know you'll be happy with all year. We recommend these guys because we trust them. MyBookie's been in business for years. As you may have heard, they've got great online reviews and their mobile site is easy to use.
Sign up this week and MyBookie will give you a 50% deposit bonus to jumpstart your payroll. It's a great way to bank even more money when you win. Plus, not only can you bet on NBA, but you can bet on a whole bunch of other sports. You can bet on NFL. Playoffs are coming up. Time to make some extra money and add higher stakes to that. You can also bet on college football, NCAA, and NHL.
Just about anything you could possibly think. Make sure you follow at BetMyBookie on Twitter. They personally respond to every mention and DM, even the one in. Sometimes they even jump into Sam and Justin's. Not to mention that they've given away more than $10,000 in free money to their followers this football season. You'll be the first to know as soon as new odds and props are posted.
Carter, let's keep Sam out of the libraries, please. Let's keep it to the talent. Don't miss out on one of the best weeks of bets on sports this year. Even bet on sports this year. You don't have to pluralize bets, but that's okay. Log on to MyBookie right now and use promo code BLUEWIRE and get a 50% deposit bonus. That's promo code BLUEWIRE. You play, you win, you get paid.
I thought you were actually scolding me there.
Oh, man. What a day. Fair. What a day. What a game.
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I was going to say, of course, a Cavs Thunder game leads to talk about Sam's nudes because that's how we had to land.
Yep. Hey, I'm ready to eat crow on something.
What is it?
Turns out the Wizards could get more toxic.
Oh, no.
Happened? David, you missed it. Carter, before the year.
I went out on an all-timer limb.
Yeah, he's like, I think the Wizards are going to be really good. I think this is all going to mesh really well for him.
My theory, David, and like...
Sweet summer child.
Well, here's the thing, David. I presented the theory as like 40% joke, but really it was closer to like 15% joke. And the premise was that the Wizards over the last 2 years had been so toxic that they couldn't possibly get more toxic, and thus it wouldn't hurt to add Dwight Howard and Austin Rivers to the roster.
Man.
So, wing and a miss.
Yeah.
Did you see that the video of Dwight jab stepping and taking and clanking a jumper off the side of the backboard with 14 seconds on the shot clock.
The Dwight Howard experience. It was, yeah, it was rough.
One of my favorite theories that I've heard, and it was on the Open Floor podcast, I think it was Gulliver that brought it up, was the reason why fewer and fewer teams are hiding their dysfunction is like, well, there's no fucking point faking chemistry. Like, the Warriors are just going to win. So why am I going to pretend that I'm getting along with Bradley Beal and Dwight Howard and Otto Porter Jr.? Like, it's all these teams just stopped caring. And apparently the Minnesota situation is a lot worse than we even realize. Washington's a disaster. And I'm sure there's going to be other teams that enter that mix. Whether or not Luke Walton survives the next couple months will be interesting. Magic Johnson's not exactly the most patient guy on the planet, nor is LeBron. It's going to be an interesting year.
Dude, can we talk about how little it took for the long game plays in LA to just completely crumble? God, I had so many fucking dog shit Lakers fans lecturing me about how their class organization wasn't gonna fucking take shortcuts or cash in any chips or make
one player is not bigger than the team, man. We have history.
Oh my God. And 10 games in, we're worried about Luke Walton's job. And they're talking about, and Magic's having to give some tepid ass votes of confidence to Luke Walton.
And there's a level of collective amnesia at work here that is just incredible.
Yeah, that you,
for a sports fan base, it's incredible.
Dude, I'm so like, that was my least favorite part of the whole LeBron leaving thing. It wasn't even about him going. I actually don't mind him being on the Lakers because I don't really have like deep seated Laker hate like a lot of people do. But the fucking arrogance from these fans that like had all these like horrible and just wrong ideas about like what it was to have LeBron on their team. And like, and they wouldn't listen to us. That's what was so weird is like, they were like, you know, like I know they don't have a lot of centers, but LeBron can play some part-time center. And we're like, no, he won't. And they're like, no, he will. Like, it's like your organization sucked, but like, you know, like he will. No, he won't. Kyle Kuzma has to play center now and he can't do it. And then they're like, well, you know, like LeBron, like, yeah, he's going to have to like carry the load on defense, but you know, they're going to have all these playmakers now. So LeBron won't have to try that hard on defense or LeBron won't have to do so much on offense. He'll actually get to focus on defense a little bit. And we're like, he's not going to fucking do that. No. They didn't. And then like,
Carter, he's going to go into the post and wait for Lonzo to inbound it to him.
God, it's just like, and then all this like kind of like style of play talk where they're like, yeah, you know, like LeBron realized what he was doing wasn't working. Like he needs other playmakers that can like get things set up. I'm like, did you not watch the first half of the Cavs year when they tried this very idea? Doesn't fucking work. like why did ever like. Like, we are LeBron experts at this point, and, like, the Lakers nation collectively was just like, we got this, buddy.
Carter, did it feel good to get that off your chest?
Oh, it felt great. I hated it. It was so frustrating to me. And like, we're just like, we're totally eating our just desserts right now.
No, I am completely on board with this because, like, like I don't even dislike the Lakers like as a team. There's a bunch of guys on that team I like.
Sure.
I don't have the sort of deep-seated Lakers. Hey, I wasn't like raised a Celtics fan and bleed green sort of thing where like the Lakers are just the enemy. But their fan base is like 400 times as big as every other fan base. I mean, maybe not quite, but it's like way bigger than every other fan base, which means that the amount of people that just like either only watch the Lakers or don't care about anything else or like only watch when the Lakers are good or quote unquote good or like supposed to be good. Mm-hmm. There's just a lot of like loud, wrong people out there about the Lakers in particular and to a less particular degree, like the Celtics and stuff and would be for the Knicks if the Knicks were anything but awful ever.
Like I said, this is the first time the Lakers have ever been relevant in the NBA Twitter era. So I think people are just getting a full taste of kind of the organizational arrogance that's there.
Yeah, it's a feature.
Yeah, you're telling me, man. It just like I just couldn't. I just like was so frustrated because like, especially before the season, I actually kind of wanted to, like, Justin and I disagreed this on this. It was like he wanted them to fail. I kind of wanted them to do well because, like, I kind of want LeBron to do well. And, like, they were making all these moves, and everyone who I was trying to tell, like, listen, he's not going to do all these things you think he's going to do for you. Like, he's awesome. He helps your team be really, really good, but not that way. Not the way you're trying to get him to be helpful, and especially not at his at this point in his career. And like, there's like, you're just a hater, man. It's like, no, I'm trying to prep you, and they didn't want to hear it.
Yeah, it's like listen to the people who know what they're taught. Like, listen to the people on the team, or like that follow the team.
Yeah, like that. We've talked about this a lot on this podcast, and this is just a general like. This is a sentiment I kind of push a lot because I think there's such a prevailing. A sentiment the other way, which is nobody really like if you're a big fan of a team, yes, you are want to be wrong in certain spots. You're gonna have blind spots because you like the team, right? Like the joke I always make is like Cavs fans blindly defending Dele when everyone else was telling us, yeah, that's a dirty play or whatever. Like, yeah, that happens, but at the same time, when you really watch a team for 82 games, not have them up on your League Pass 4 box, but like you're really watching because you're invested, you just catch stuff that no one else catches.
Right. Yeah. It inevitably happens. So you notice what's really going on behind the scenes, and you see what goes into the breakdowns when those breakdowns are success when they're success. But you know what? They signed Tyson Chandler, so everything's going to be okay.
I actually think he's going to help. I know he's washed, but like, dude, they're playing Kyle Kuzma at backup center.
Yeah, he's got to be better than JaVale. He's got
to
be better.
Well, even if he doesn't have to be better than JaVale. He just has to play the minutes JaVale sits.
True.
Because Serge Ibaka was fucking wrecking them.
I am so on board with the Ibaka songs. I am so happy for him.
Yeah, I was wondering.
My man was a part-time Instagram model. Go ahead.
Yeah, I just always wondered how Thunder fans felt about him, like because he was kind of that fourth peg.
No, I love Ibaka.
Big fan of him. So, ultimately, do you wish that they could have hung on to him? That they hung on to Depot instead? Like, what? When you're looking back and using hindsight, what would you have preferred?
I think the trade they did was good because they got good value for it. But I mean that the trade that they did for Ibaka was supposed to be for a Westbrook, Robertson, Durant, Horford, Adams starting lineup with Victor Oladipo anchoring a bench.
God, that team would have been good.
It would have been filthy. And Horford came pretty close, but like everything falls apart, and then all of a sudden you got two ball dominant guards in the backcourt sharing the ball with each other, and nobody on the team can shoot. And then they missed Cass Sabonis as a spot up shooter because he was the closest thing that they had in that starting lineup, or even on the team.
Yeah, I don't know, man. It just feels like Oladipo like couldn't have been what he became anywhere in any other like timeline. It like had to go this way. It feels like.
Yeah, and like. I don't think he could have been what he is now without being on the Thunder, like you said. And I, you know, you can tie yourself up in knots over the what if game. There's no real point in that. Like, the team is what it is now. And I think, the Thunder are a reasonably smart front office. They're not going to knock every move out of the park because no front office does that. But they're, like, their owner stays out of the way. They're, for the most part, I mean, I think they learned the lesson in 2012. They've got a pretty good general manager. They don't, like, they use their farm system. Like, how many teams, we're lucky. We are the luckiest of fan bases.
I would actually really agree with that. Like, I know a lot of people have made it like fashionable to shit on the Thunder, but like no one is more supportive of trying to field a competitive team every year than me. Like, and I've talked about this a lot, like younger Carter, like who had a little more free time, was like super on board for tanks, like get yourself as many ping pong balls as possible. And, you know, just, it doesn't matter. Like the on-court stuff doesn't matter until you stockpile talent and it's championship or bust. But like now, like, especially like, man, this year it is just such a slog to take the time to watch a team this bad. So like,
Hey, it's going to give you a 14% chance to drop picks.
Yeah. Thank God. I don't know, man. So like watching the Thunder, like keep bringing it back, like bring back Paul George, even if you don't think you're a title contender. And like, and hell, if things break right and you get the chance to pick up someone to put you over the top, of course you go for it. But in the meantime, stay as competitive as you can for as long as you can, because that's the point. The point is to try to win. And I get the logic behind these tanking teams, but as a fan, and that's why I watch basketball, because I'm a fan of the game, it's kind of refreshing.
Well, no, you never really know, too. I mean, like, you maximize your chances with those top picks, for sure. But people don't realize how much chance goes into this stuff. I mean, these guys do all this research and all that sort of thing. There's all this money plowed into it, and the best and the smartest front offices whiff badly, often.
Yeah, I mean, I think – and for a Thunder fan to be saying that after the one of the best four-year runs in draft history, like – shows you how true it is.
Yeah. I honestly, the Thunder in a lot of ways are what I hope the Cavs can get to, is like a solid team that's reasonably well run, that is competitive, is fun to watch. And like that's where I'd like the Cavs to get to. Cause I think so many things have to go your way. You have to have so much luck to win a title that the Cavs have used up a lot of that luck, but if they can at least be respectable and kind of change the conversation around the team, that's really what I hope for. And we could go over, as David said, you could really tie yourself up with what ifs, and Thunder are probably one of the more interesting what if teams ever, with what if they put the trade through with Tyson Chandler? What if they didn't trade Harden, or what if they traded Russ instead of Harden, or like a million other what ifs that are there. But ultimately, even when things haven't worked out well, I think Presti has done a good job turning those items into something good. Like even when Carmelo Anthony didn't work out, he turned that into Dennis Schroeder, and they are getting reasonably good value for that money, considering that it was basically kind of a sunk cost with Melo.
You could argue Victor Oladipo didn't work, and they got like, he did not work nearly as well as they hoped he would.
They turned it into Paul George.
It's like, like this guy is just like, he's like the guy that goes to like the flea market with like something very low value and just slowly trades it up until he gets to something that, until he is like walking out with like a grand piano or some shit like that. Like, it's just really amazing to watch him like not only get big hits, but to salvage big mistakes.
Yeah. And that's the thing. Like people insist that everything has to be, I think, and I've heard it referred to, I don't remember, it's like Warriors delirium or something like that, where everybody's like, oh, it should work out perfectly. Like every move that you make should just magically happen. It's like, no, this is what they call a black swan event. This is one of those events that happens like once every 20 years, and it reshapes the entire landscape of the league. It's like, I do salary cap stuff, as that's kind of my niche. And the amount of things that had to break right for everything to line up for this Warriors team is insane. Like they did, not saying that it was all luck, like they did really, really good work as a front office and as a coaching staff, but you cannot reach that level without luck. It's like you can get yourself at spitting distance, but I mean, if the salary cap changes were a year off from what they were, the Thunder would be sitting in the Warriors spot.
No, for sure. Luck is a really big thing. So I think this is a good time to give a very important reminder to our listeners. Sacrifice goats at least once a month to pray to the basketball gods for RJ Barrett. If you don't
I thought you were about to do an ad read.
Chickens
no. with chickens goats.
I don't have access to goats here, but chickens are fine.
No, 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 no. Before you log on to mybookie.com and use Blue Wire as a promo code to get a 50% deposit bonus, before you do that, go out, sacrifice some wildlife, some farm animals, whatever it is. Pray to the basketball gods and let's get us RJ Barrett.
This is where I put in the disclaimer that neither Blue Wire nor any of our ad affiliates support the sacrifice of live animals prior to using their service.
No. Do you know that? And make sure if you are.
I read it in the contract. It's in the fine print.
Okay. you know what? These contracts, you didn't think that it would affect your normal day-to-day life, but here it is, infringing on my rights. But David, thank you so much for coming on. We really do appreciate your perspective. It was a good time. Again, make sure that you follow David on Twitter at Bird Rights NBA. I didn't mess that up, right?
No, you're good. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, perfect. Bird Rights NBA. So thanks again for coming on. Remember to our listeners, support the show, subscribe, leave a rating, leave a review. If you want to be part of our Discord chat, take a screenshot of that review you leave on iTunes and email it to chasedownpod@gmail.com. And again, make sure that you support our sponsors, MyBookie. As I mentioned before, 50% deposit bonus when you use promo code BlueWire. So thanks again to our listeners. Thanks to David. And until next time, go.